Hi, John. Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, loud and clear.
Excellent.
How you be?
I'm tired.
Oh.
Yeah, it's been a very intense couple of weeks. And
Yeah.
I'm hearing a lot of yelling and screaming around me,
Oh, okay.
banging the pots and pans. They do that at 7 o'clock every night. Do they
Oh,
do
okay.
that there?
No.
No.
Like you pointed out, different frequency going on here in Southern California than in New York.
It's like a social media thing. Everyone just sticks their head out the window and bangs their pot and pan, yells and screams and hollers. They're doing it right now around me. So it
Yeah.
just sort of is it's just letting people know we're still here, you know.
Yeah. I kind of a twist on in Italy, they sing to each other, I heard.
Yeah. I think that's very charming.
I love it, but
But
America.
I wouldn't like it here in New York.
Oh,
I
okay.
think Noah Trevor did a spoof on that because he went out, he lives in New York, you know. He went out on his fire escape and he wanted to imitate what the Italians do. He started singing "Hola," and someone shouted, "Shut the fuck
I was just gonna say, yeah,
up!"
you got to consider the land that you're on, you know.
That's right. So the cultures are that's a different culture. But I think
Yeah.
we should borrow what we can from other cultures,
Yeah.
and then God bless the Italians. My God, have they been hit badly by this?
Yes,
Yeah,
exactly.
and they're
Yeah.
persevering. How are
Yeah.
you doing?
You know, I appreciate that I'm doing it differently because I am in Southern California and Riverside, like you pointed out, it's not as intense, but because I live here, it is intense, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And I've been a little bit restless, and because of being stuck at home and also having to navigate, I think I pointed out last time, it's the difference in the degree of how I handle this versus my landlord has a higher hyper, not I'm heightened, I understand, but he's on hyper mode, and it's caused me to really practice equanimity a lot.
I
You know what I
hear you.
mean?
Oh, absolutely. I have to find that fine line. Hey,
Yeah.
Marco.
Howdy.
Hey, Marco.
Hello.
Long time no see.
Yeah, good to see you.
Yeah, I love your skull cap.
Thanks. I'm getting back to these now. I don't know. Just fits my mood, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. You're in for the long haul of whatever it is we're doing.
Yeah, this weird social distancing, self-isolation, kind of
How's
life,
it
corona
going there?
lifestyle.
Yeah. And it's not a party. It's not a corona party.
Not yet. Let's see what we can do about that.
How's the family, Marco?
Well, there's definitely been tensions inside of the family ecosystem. It has a lot to do with the weather, and it's a lot like the weather, in that there's sunny days and there's cloudier days and there's stormy days. And I think at the moment there's a bit of a lull and a release. And even in Colorado, we've had a bunch of snow. We had about a foot of snow, but
Wow.
today the sun came out and it's all melting and turning into
They
puddles
said,
and mud.
yeah, it's very cold here. The winter is holding on, and it's really disappointing to see these cold, gray days. How are you feeling, Seth, out in Brooklyn? It's a
Yeah.
cold, cold, damp day out there too, right?
Quite cold, yes. But I
Yeah.
haven't been outside at all. I've just been looking out the window. So I just imagine what it's like out there.
Yeah, I haven't gone out much today. I did a little shopping. I go to the stores have really been very benevolent to the senior population, and they have an hour, senior hour, so the seniors can do their shopping, expedite it really fast. Everyone
Cool.
else has to stand in line for an hour. I never thought there were any benefits to getting old, but maybe there are. I feel a little guilty, but also I feel like, hey guys, Yeah, I'm giving you something to look forward to.
Oh, well, you've earned it.
I think I have, but it's one of those little fringe benefits. And I also am just, it's just very weird. But I just want to share with you the title of this event I came up with last night, The Language of Desire and the Search for the Elusive Personal Pronoun I. And don't ask me what that means. I'm not really sure. I think it has something to do with, and I something came to me this afternoon. I'll just share this anecdote, like a first person account of the personal pronoun I, and I want, and how important that can be for a healthy functioning. And I believe the sense of agency that many of us long for, in especially in our networks and our politics. I'm very aware that there's a lot of well, let me tell you the story. It's about Bobby. Bobby is a very dear friend of mine. I met him during the AIDS epidemic. This was in the 80s, the early 80s. He was diagnosed with AIDS. He was blonde, blue-eyed, beautiful California boy. I was very attracted to him. But his he was a runner. He was a very good athlete. He was a macrobiotic chef. He radiated health. And he, of course, was often depressed because everyone around him told him, so many people around him told him that he was going to die because he had this fatal diagnosis, which was 100% fatal. At any rate, I became very close with him. And I introduced him. I had a medical doctor friend of mine and who was giving me a lot of these dreary statistics. And I said, well, you know, I have a friend and, you know, he's been diagnosed with AIDS, but, you know, he looks great. He's an athlete, blah, blah, blah. And I arranged for them. I took them out to dinner. And it was very interesting because the doctor was startled to meet my friend Bobby, and he was asked him all kinds of questions about the diagnosis, about the drugs he was taking. Bobby says, I don't take any drugs. It's totally drug-free. He never took an aspirin. And the doctor wanted to know what he was doing because the doctor said, I can look at you and tell that you're in very good health. And, you know, Bobby made a list of things that he was doing. And I think that what I learned from Bobby is that he was, one of the things he learned when he was with his sister going to get the diagnosis, this fatal diagnosis. The news was very bad. But his sister said something to him. She said, you can do whatever you want, Bobby, and I will support you. But these people, she was talking about the doctors and the nurses, they don't care about you. Everyone, as they were delivering this diagnosis, every one of them had a smile on their face. So there they were, smiling as they told this guy he was doomed. And I thought that was brilliant observation by his sister, who was a part of his support network, that she was able to help him stabilize so that he could start becoming very attuned to the mixed messages that were in his environment, which he was already pretty attuned to just by being a gay man. He was surrounded by mixed messages. But I learned how important it was. And that exchange between the doctor, my doctor friend and Bobby, and the doctor saying, wow, this, he doesn't fit. It did not fit the doctor's belief system. So I think these are the kind of challenges that we went through back then in the 80s, and we learned a great deal about desire and I want. Doesn't mean just because I want this, I'm going to get it. And but those that are around you are saying, oh, you can't have that. You can have this, you can have this, and you can have that, but I don't want that. This is what I want. I think that kind of tenacity, which Bobby certainly displayed, rubbed off on me. And I started to really question those around me who told me I couldn't have something that I really wanted. So I guess I'm just bringing this up because it's about pattern and pattern detection. And if you look at, I think, some of the patterns that I observed in Bobby's behavior and his beliefs, he had a very strong sense of self. He had a very strong internal frame. He listened to what others had to say, but he also always followed his own, what he wanted. He was very sensitive to the verbals and the nonverbal communications around him. And he was moving towards health. He wasn't interested in symptoms or disease. He was coming from, this is what I want health. And these are the kind of things that I'm going to do to create the conditions for that, like being a runner, macrobiotic diets, support groups, meditation, rituals. And I think this is the difference between magical thinking, which so many people have such contempt for, and what I would call imaginal thinking. How can we use our imaginations in creative ways rather than getting swept away by the theory du jour? And I believe there's some resonance with those experiences that I had back then and what's happening now. As I look at the press and the media and all the food fights that are going on, and some brilliant conversations, some very great people out there thinking very, very hard. And I'm learning a lot from all of them. And yet I'm also finding myself that there's a wisdom in insecurity, as Watts said. It's like, okay, I have beliefs, but I hold some beliefs very strongly and some beliefs very lightly. And the evidence can change, but also there's some things I will never have evidence for, but I still want it. And I think that's where the visionary comes in, because the visionary can't line up all the evidence for supporting this this desire, but she wants it anyway. And I think that's what we're sort of, that's what I'm sort of inviting us to open ourselves up to, that possibility that the language of desire, the search for that personal pronoun I, that sense of agency, it's extremely precious and very sacred. And as we look at the medical model, the educational model, we recently, some of us looked at Zach Stein's work on the mythopoetics, and how he's talked about the educational model came out of battlefield metaphors. Basically, they had IQ tests that would support, you know, what kind of a soldier will this student turn into? Also, our medical model is driven by problems and by disease. And a reductive move, breaking things into parts. And I think that solutions and solving problems often at the level of the problem. So basically, they come up with solutions that support no change whatsoever. So we'll just give you a pill, or we'll do this therapy, or we'll do this surgery. You don't have to change at all. Just follow these very externally oriented practices. So I'm just sharing that with you guys, and I hope tonight we can, maybe at the end of the session, with Seth, your help, because I know you know some of these techniques that you and I have worked on quite a bit. And I've introduced some of it to Marco and to Michael. But the difference between a desired outcome, a solution, and a problem. And that would be my feedback for this exploration tonight is, do we have a sense of that? And if you can listen to a conversation or listen to someone's, and you can tell, okay, let me give you an example. Can you do this with me, Seth? Are you with me with this? Okay.
Sure.
Okay, you ask me for, what would you like to have happen?
What would you like to have happen?
My back hurts.
And my back hurts.
Hold on a second. I don't know how to go about this. Oh, ask me that question again.
What would you like to have happen?
I would like to get a hard mattress.
I would like to get a hard mattress.
Now, and ask me that question again.
What would you like to have happen?
I want a strong and healthy back. I want a strong and healthy body, period. And I'm just asking Michael and Marco, are you registering the differences what was the problem? Which was the solution? Which was the desired outcome?
Right. Well, your hurt back is the problem. The solution is the hard mattress, and then the desired outcome is health and strength. So.
Yay!
All right.
I got my desired outcome. This is all I wanted to get across, and you've already got it. So we did it. Thank you.
Cool. Do I get a star?
Get a star.
Okay.
I hope this is generative and can lead to a generative discussion, because we're surrounded by problem statements, proposed solutions, and occasionally, rarely, I think it's very rare, we hear and actually what someone really wants, which for reasons, maybe because we live in a battlefield culture, and we're all trained to be good little soldiers. I'm just hypothesizing here. It's sometimes hard for us to share with people what we really want. If we've never been asked that before, what do you really want? And no one's asked you that before. It can be a very strange thing for someone to ask you, what would you like to have happen?
Especially in a competitive culture where you're competing for outcomes. And on the most basic level, in a family, when there's competition for attention for mother or father, that's where it struck me, or where it strikes me, is I like how you're laying out distinctions of desired outcome, problem, solution. I do like that, but I've spent most of my life, that's just a morass of fucking shit, to put it bluntly.
A morass of fucking shit? And when a morass of fucking shit, what would you like to have happen?
Something to grow. I want to grow something.
You want to grow something?
Only because I've learned that shit can grow something.
Awesome.
I want to open the frame, have an open frame, wherever you guys want to go with this. Or if you want to go somewhere else, it's fine too.
Let me try to formulate some response. It may turn into a question and it may not, but you talked about the search for I, and I think that, that sense of agency, I think that what is challenging in that search is that there is not the I without the relationship, without others, with whom to get what one wants, one must find some way to cooperate. So there's no getting what I want in a vacuum. There's no getting what I want without other people being involved, either as part of the operational chain, so to speak, in terms of bringing that about, or as people who would be affected by my getting what I want. Whether or not they're directly a part of it, but they're part of the equation. They're a kind of hidden part of the equation a lot of the time. The externalities is how I think that, that's referred to in economics. So I think that part of what could be, I think, valuable, attractive in this dialogue is to see what happens if people can express what they want in a space where there's, now I may be expressing a desired outcome even right now, but in a space where there is room for that to breathe and see how it interacts with other desired outcomes. Before the presumption that those desired outcomes must all come true, that's, I think, a key thing there. Because until there can be a dialogue and an exploration of what that those interactions are and what the causes and the effects, if you will, what needs to come together for this desired outcome to manifest, and then what will happen after that, that's something that is, comes about through all those interactions. So I appreciate opening up a space like this. And I know that I already feel there are things I want to say, but at the same time, I don't know whether they will have the impetus, or they will have the kind of like electric charge, like to jump forth. I think that's one of the things that a desired outcome needs sometimes, is a field that allows it to polarize, so that it could leap forth from a state of latency into a state of actualization.
That's great. Thank you. Seth?
A lot of really good metaphors already. Everyone has put forth really cool imagery. I'm inspired. What were you going to ask, John?
Where would you like to start? It's an open frame. You can go wherever you want with this.
Yeah, I'm thinking. I have a couple ideas. One thing I've found really interesting is time-based questions or iterative questions. And what I mean is, if someone asks me what would I like to have happen, or what's my desired outcome, and I say, I want to become a great chef. And then if the next question then is, and then what happens, or if you keep kind of asking like this iterative, what would the great chef want to have happen, or whatever, it really starts revealing this whole path forward of what might have even been behind, or even if I picked maybe a solution or a problem instead, what would you like to have happen? I want my roommate to fall out of a window. It's like, oh, cool. So once your roommate falls out of a window, then what happens? Like, then I have peace and quiet. Oh, I mean, you have peace and quiet. What does that mean? It's like, well, I just feel like my real self. Then it's pretty cool. I've been thinking lately about how desired outcomes are productive and valuable to me, because very often they don't even result in, they don't occur as I would imagine them or want them to, but it gives me this direction, and then I learn so much more along the way, or maybe I end up going towards a different goal or something. But to me, these things really point out that I'm always in motion, and are very clarifying in this regard.
So it's a good, it gives you a direction.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Last time you said a development of the miraculous. I listened to last time we had, I watched the video of it, which I often do, and I missed so much. It's really interesting to me how that happens. And I think it has something to do with the technology. It also has to do with where my attention is going, and also that I have these four little faces in these little boxes on top of the screen here, and I'm sort of, from that I have to extract some kind of feedback so that I can organize my behavior. And we talked about this last time, how challenging that is. So I'm just really so glad we had this archive, because I can look back on it and I can think, oh, wow, yeah, that's really interesting how the technology, the virtual, the verbal, the nonverbal, the very subtle, how we inevitably misquote, misread. And I think these are the normal human frailties we all have to deal with. But I think what I love about clean language is it gives me a break from having to come up with some sort of brilliant repartee or some sort of global understanding of something that I don't understand at all. Someone that maybe says something very mysterious to me, but I don't have to figure it out. I just have to, when I'm doing this clean language ritual, I get a sort of disappear and just find myself like an open channel. And it's very, it relieves me of the kind of attention and stress that comes from having to understand someone, having to curtail certain things so that I can make things palatable to this, what I think this other person wants to hear. And all those things that we have to do to get through the day with other people. So I think it could be very liberating to what would you like to have happen? And then to suspend all of my judgments and all my cultural biases and just relax around the language that the person actually uses, and to feedback and then ask a clean question, which we did last time, and you did really well, Seth, with the group. I really applaud you and thank you for your support, because I really feel like you're supporting me in this exploration we're doing. And anyway, you mentioned a development of the miraculous, and then you talked a bit, and then you said, what I really want is an understanding. And I look at myself as a modeler, and I was sort of in between the first statement and the second statement. And I wasn't really landing on either one of those statements in my in the clean language questions. So I think it was interesting, because I think you gave a very emphatic desired outcome, but I wasn't paying attention to it. Yeah. I was paying attention to the first statement, which was a development of the miraculous, which, by the way, has no pronoun I in that statement. Hmm. And I think, but the other statement you made, what I really want is an understanding. That seems to me a very clear desired outcome. So that's what I learned by reviewing this. Is that, oh, okay, I think that's what I needed to pay attention to. Other desired outcomes, we didn't really have, it was sort of fuzzy, to inhabit and manifest whatever this brings to the moment. That was Michael. And he really, and you did have a really robust somatization of that. Inhabit and manifest. You even took off your shirt at a certain point. I think if you hadn't had those headphones on, you would have swirled it around the room.
Yeah. I would have had more fun with it, yeah.
So I think this is, Doug isn't here now. But I think these are, and I worked with, I want to explore relational processes that make other relational processes possible. And I had a drawing. And I worked a little bit more on that today. And maybe this could go in many different directions. Maybe we could think about necessary conditions, creating necessary conditions for a desired outcome. And it's not neat and tidy. I mean, coming up with a desired outcome isn't necessarily easy. Some people, it takes them months to come up with a desired outcome. They will hem and haw and laugh and cry and go into all kinds of meta comments about everything on about the planet. And, you know, well, what do you want to have happen? It's very hard for them. So you have to respect that. So I'm not wanting to rush anyone to a desired outcome if they're really addicted to a problem, or they like, you know, proposing solutions all over the place. That's fine. But I think there is a flow that once you get a desired outcome and you develop it and you perhaps ask for metaphor and you have different symbols and relationships between symbols, then you can get to what are the necessary conditions for making this desired outcome happen. And that, I think, is something that rarely happens. And I've been with this group for 3 years, and I think we have a tendency. This is a comment which, you know, I'm not, you guys may disagree with me. I think it's collective. I think as individuals, we do find the necessary conditions for what we want to have happen. But I think as a collectively, as a group that's willing to create safe to fail experiments, I think it would be really great if we could get to a space where necessary conditions were something that we really valued, so that we could do what Marco was suggesting. We could then have polarity responses in the group. You could have pros and cons and differences that make differences, because there would be enough resilience and robustness in the group, because you know what you want. If you know what you want to have happen, and you have a clearly stated desired outcome, and you've embodied that, and you've created metaphors and relationships between the symbols, that all of that is a landscape which is isomorphic or shares a form to what's happening to you in the world. And then you can be in a place of, okay, now what do I need to, what needs to happen to make this desired outcome happen? And I think that's would be the next, that would be the next developmental kind of sequence for myself as well, because I think that's kind of tricky. And like I said, it's not neat. It's not easily put in a linear kind of from A to B, and there's C, and C gets in the way, to something that's pretty linear, to something that's like, well, there's A, there's B, there's C, and you can go this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, this way. And then you can get to that desired outcome, but it's in a small world sort of network, it's much more nonlinear and can go all over the place before you get there. I hope some of this makes sense.
Can I propose that there's a inherent polarity that we're working with this?
Oh, sure. There's all over the place. We're going to have binds and double binds and resistances.
Well, I'm thinking, as you watching your hands move and you talk, the natural polarity between desired outcome and the uncertainty that comes with having a desired outcome. That seems to be, for me, a grounding polarity of working with what you're saying, Joan.
Could you expand on that, Mike?
And what happens next? Is that what it is? Well, this is from personal experience of actually working with what John's talking about, but in an intuitive way. For a long time, he's giving words to it. I've had a lot of desired outcomes, like I wanted to stay married. I wanted that outcome. That didn't happen. That the uncertainty came in and changed. The outcome changed. I didn't get that outcome. There's just been life experiences that, for me, I've had desired outcomes and actually done what John said of doing my best to set the conditions. And then uncertainty or something comes in, and a lot of my practice in my later years, especially after the age of 50, has been how to work with that tension between having a desired outcome, like I want my children to call me on their own. How do I get that? Well, there's a lot of uncertainty because they're living their lives. You know, I don't know if that clarifies it more. It's that tension of, well, to ground it in a metaphor that's favorite of mine is when you go to wrestle in a wrestling match, you have a desired outcome to put that motherfucker on the back and pin his ass. It doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes it's your back on the mat. So I hope that clarifies what I'm saying.
Yeah, that would be great to work with that more and ask questions. And yeah, I think that's very interesting.
Thank you.
We can sponsor one another here, Seth. and Michael and Marco. And I just want to create a structure, a sort of organization, a self-organizing system here. So if we know what our desired outcomes are, we can work in a time-effective way, because we have about an hour and a half, and there are four of us here. I think I have I have a desired outcome, and I have a map, and I've added a few things on there. My desired outcome would be to get this map into my neurology. And so clean questions could assist me, I'm sure. Marco wasn't here last time. I think it would be great to focus our attention, Seth and I, maybe, on Marco, and then with Michael. And then if Marco would want to, after asking a few clean questions, he may get a desired outcome, maybe not, but we could then direct him to making a representation, which Marco's done before many times. And then we could work with Michael and get a representation or a dance or a jig or whatever from Michael. And we could work with you, Seth, however way you want to do this. But I'm thinking about like maybe 10, 15-minute clean language per person, and then do a drawing just so we can keep the flow going. Does that make – this has worked before, and we sort of did the same thing last time.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that sound okay with you, Seth?
Yeah. I wonder if just if we're having multiple people asking the questions, if it makes any sense to maybe like do an alternation or have some sort of like not a hard order to it, but just something guiding so there's not too much kind of like –
Do you mean Michael and Marco asking questions, or
I don't know what I mean. I mean if it was you could go in a round every ask, or you could go between two people every, you know, or you could have one person go for a little bit and another. It might not even be necessary. It's just a thought to give it a little something.
So kind of tag team the questioning.
Yeah.
I have a list of all the major questions up there. This is the list. I posted them in the forum. I'm okay with this, but I just want you all, I want everyone to have a very successful experience of asking clean questions. And it's very rare, I found my experience, that people have a successful experience asking clean questions at the beginning. Because I don't think it's the question, is there anything else? What kind of? Does it have a size or shape? Is it inside or outside? To me, it's about the syntax. It's, and when, blah, 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 blah. Is there anything else about blah, 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 blah? And I think that's the syntax that creates the hypnotic, those perceptual feedback loops between conscious and unconscious process. That I think, and that's fine. We could do that because it's very poetic and it's quite enjoyable. And I think that's when you get those interior kind of resonances when you feedback the precise language that person has used, and then you add a clean question. Does that make sense, Seth?
Yeah.
I'm not, either way, Seth and I are making this up as we go along, so it's very much an improv. We could do both, actually. We could do both ways of doing it.
Yeah, or another idea too, I don't wanna fill the space with too many ideas before we just do stuff, but another possibility I just thought of is if the person getting questioned could even choose, be like, I just wanna be asked questions by one person, or everybody. We can go back and forth, or you and you, or like, I don't know.
Okay.
I want all of you to ask me questions.
Okay.
Let's do it
your way, Sam.
But
you want to do it.
Okay. But what... John,
but
why
I'm
don't
not clear
you,
about what you,
you
want
could
to do.
Start. You could start, and then, you know, hand maybe very conscientiously hand the baton over to Seth, and
why doesn't Seth start? What, Seth, if you want to work with Marco, since Marco wasn't here last time.
Okay, let's do it.
And you could ask half a dozen questions, maybe,
yeah.
Or take it wherever you want, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And I'm like a support person, and you can call on me if you want me to join you or not. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
And I was just going to say, as far as me asking questions, I'm going to, if I was, would only be listening to the what's going on if I need to, because from my point of view, Seth may ask questions I already have in my mind. That makes sense? So.
Right. Right.
Yeah, this is great.
I'll just add that I saw, you know, the list of questions that you included in the forum post, John. And for me, that was actually the first time seeing them all like in one list and chunked up with different headings. Mm-hmm. So it gave me a different understanding of what you're doing when you ask those questions, because it kind of shows me, and there may be more questions and there are infinite variations, I'm sure, in how you can ask the questions, nuances and such, but it showed me like the notes that you're working with.
Okay.
And that it's like playing a tone in a way that you can choose any of those questions and there's an intuitive sensitivity to like what is the note that's going to bring forth the next expression on, you know, of the outcome or of an imaginal reality, you know, from the person you're working with. So, but I wouldn't presume to know how to do that just from seeing the list either. So I don't want to presume to ask those kinds of questions, even though I would be open to practicing with them. But I'm not sure if that's really the purpose of this particular meeting.
Because right. This isn't a training to do clean language. It takes about a year. How long did it work? It took us about a year, Seth, before you really got up to speed.
That was
every weekend. So yeah. I'm not expecting. But I think it's okay to play around with the questions. And there are, I think once you know what the basic questions are, it can be fun just to go in a round and just like anyone just toss out a question. So now I'm thoroughly confused about what we should do or how we should go about this. But
well,
we had some, I think last time what you did was great because Seth, you worked with Marco. I mean, you worked with Michael, you worked with Doug, you worked with me. Mm-hmm. We didn't get a chance to work with you.
I think you asked me some questions.
Hmm?
I think you did. You asked me a few.
I think that's where the development of the miraculous came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, but we didn't get to what I really want is an understanding, which is what I think what your desired outcome really was. But let's get started.
Cool.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready, Marco?
I'm ready.
So what would you like to have happen?
I think that I would like to explore some desired outcomes that I have that I feel are latent. They're in my consciousness but unexpressed, or if expressed, expressed fragmentarily and haltingly. I think that it would be good to feel for myself that there was an externalization of what is internal. And I'll say that there's a size and a shape to that there's a kind of compressed quality. There's a feeling of compression. And being able to state, to express what these desired outcomes were and to allow them to breathe would remove that compression. It would come out from like this out here like this. So that's what I would like to have happen.
And like this.
Yeah.
And to allow him to breathe.
Yes.
And a compressed quality.
Right.
And to feel for myself the externalization of what is internal.
Yes.
And when allow them to breathe, is there anything else about breathe?
I'm breathing right now, and I'm feeling pressure on my chest. This comes and goes. Sometimes it's stronger, sometimes it's more open. If I go for a walk, which I did just before this meeting, I can breathe with my surroundings. With, if there are trees, I can breathe with them, sky, clouds, space. But I do find that the conditions of my life can make it hard to breathe in that etheric sense, a breathing of that imaginal body, which is also has a physical aspect to it.
And the breathing of the imaginal body, which also has a physical aspect to it.
Yes.
And the conditions of my life can make it hard to breathe.
Yes.
And compressed quality and allow them to breathe.
Yes.
And when a breathing of the imaginal body, that's imaginal body like what?
It's imaginal body like creative play, like a free creative play, and musical, and intellectual, and poetic, and relational, like loving, communal, childlike, giving. There's, yeah. I'm feeling like I could keep giving him adjectives, and maybe that it'd be better to find a metaphor for it.
I would find. Can I ask you? Do we have a desired outcome, Seth?
There's several things that Marco said. I see to feel for myself that externalization of what is internal. I see to allow them to breathe. I would go for everything else as a development of those.
But I think those are also preliminary. That's in a way what the quality of desired outcomes being externalized would be, but it's not the desired outcomes themselves, I think.
I hear a lot, this is me, and I hear a lot of proposed solutions. I haven't got a, I want this or that or this or this. I get a lot of proposals and some resourceful states. And this is, I feel like there's, and also, and I think we need a location. We need more location. And I'm just sharing this with Seth because we both are practitioners. So this is basically, this is sort of a meta comment, which you're overhearing, which is something that, you know, some people say you shouldn't do. You should never let, that it's not clean. But I'm doing something different, and I'm doing something that's cleanish and maybe a little murky, but I think there's something very valuable about systemic modeling. So it's not just someone else's interiors and being very sacrosanct about that, but that you're sharing this in a public space. And it's, I think that something systemic starts to happen when, oh, that's Marco's metaphor, that's Michael's metaphor. That's John's metaphor. That's Seth's metaphor. That's their metaphorical landscape, but that they're all sharing it, I think something, a different kind of relationship to all of these, each other's interior starts to emerge. I hope that makes sense.
It makes sense in the sense it feels holographic, John, to me. Holographic.
Excellent. That's great. I could work with that metaphor for sure.
So let's move forward.
Let's move it.
I may be being evasive too. Perhaps I'm being evasive or too tentative or just not direct enough.
What would you like to have happen now, Marco?
Well, I would like to be more concrete.
Okay.
Because there are things that I want to have happen that are fairly concrete and they kind of line up, and there are semi at least perceived dependencies amongst.
Okay. I would like to find, what was that? I missed that. Did you hear it said? I would like to something concrete.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was a complete sentence. Okay. I would like something concrete. I'm just trying to, I'm not sure I heard it correctly.
I would like to express something concrete, like to say something concrete that I would like to have happen, because.
I would like to express something concrete. Is there anything else about concrete?
That it would be actualizable in my life. That it would be objective, not, even if not objective scientifically, it would be objective to myself and to, you know, others who would perceive this.
And I would like to express concrete. I'm not sure I'm getting the language right. Did you get that, Seth? I would like to express something concrete and actualizable, and when and actualizable, and is there anything else about concrete? Is there a size or a shape? When concrete, and I want to express something concrete.
Yes, I mean, that it would be, would mean that my life would be different in some real way. I'm not just being vague here, like I'm describing the quality of the concreteness, but not the things themselves that would be concrete.
And I want to express something concrete and actualizable, and my life would be
different. Yeah.
And when actualizable and my life would be different, what happens to concrete?
Well, I guess it wouldn't matter anymore at that point. I mean, the concrete is an adjective I'm using now to refer to a desired outcome, a kind of a domain of desired outcome. That is to say, when I first responded to Seth's question, what do you want to have happen? I talked about expressing something, and then the qualities of that expression of being from going from contracted to expansive and breathing. But that was more of a reflection on my state and on a felt experience, but not like something that I later and refer to as concrete. So, for example, I have a desired outcome to complete a poem that I've started a long time ago and have been laboring to bring to completion, to bring to fruition and to completion. And this is just one poem in you know, a literary life, and in a larger, you know, cultural moment. But for me, it seems to be, or it's become, a like a reason for living. A not that the poem is the only the reason that I'm alive or what I live for, but that it's organized kind of a meaning of existence that I feel would be quite, would be very liberatory and it has to do with how poetry works too, as a, not just as a kind of decorative words, but as a way of recoding the psyche and of vibrating with realities or with energies, you know, that are very, that can be very powerful, actually. So it's kind of like a magician or a wizard, like finding the right combination of ingredients to create a spell and developing powers. So I feel that poetry is a kind of power that can be developed, and it could be.
Can we pause?
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask Seth. I want to go meta. I want to call a timeout, and I want to confer a little bit with Seth. And I just want to. I want to express something concrete. I also heard I want to complete a poem. My question for you, Seth, because I have lots of questions here. When I want to express something concrete and I want to complete a poem, what kind of I is that I? When I want to complete a poem, what kind of I is that I? When I want to express something concrete, and is that the same I, or is that a different I? Mm-hmm. So we may have multiple parts here, or it could be just a restatement of something that you get my drift.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to approach this in the cleanest way possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also hear Michael goes meta quite a bit here. I mean, he's meta-commenting. He's talking about a theory of poetry and on, goes on and on and on. But what I was listening for is a desired outcome. And he gave us two. I don't know which is the desired outcome he really wants. I had a client who'd been, she was in her mid-60s. She'd been married and divorced three times. Her desired outcome, I want to find a man. And I thought, okay, I really didn't believe her. That's what she really wanted, but I went with it. And after about halfway through the session, she said, you know what? There's something about the questions you're asking me that makes me feel like this is the kind of feeling I get when I write poetry. And we developed that a little bit. And what she really wanted to do, what she ended up at the end of the session was, she wanted to write a play, which is a big difference from I want to find a man, which is what she started with. So I'm just saying we may have a desired outcome, but that's not really what we want. There may be another desired outcome. So the first one may be provisional. There may be several. So I think it's sort of a very fluid, dynamic kind of situation, especially when you're working with someone like Marco, who's very rich in her life. So I hope that makes some sense. So I don't know exactly where to go with this. But I think that personal pronoun I. So you want to ask a few questions, Seth? I'll let you go for it, and I can sort of take a meta position. How can we support Marco the best? That's my main interest here.
Hold on just one second. I have somebody knocking at my door.
Hey, you're going to break the glass.
But I want you to see something. Come out.
Well, right now I'm sitting talking to my friends over there. What up? Let me see.
And Michael, we'll get a chance to work with you.
I have to look at a snowman. I'll be right back.
I mean, I have a little bit of a performance anxiety because other people who are not being directly addressed, yeah. I don't want them to get bored or feel left out. So I want
put yourself at ease, John, from my point of view. This is enjoyable just seeing how the process is processing.
Right.
You get my drift.
Great.
You
know,
if you don't even get to me, it's still going to be enjoyable to me.
Well, I so much appreciate that support. I really do. Because I think that you're a good meta person and you could always feedback what you like, what you don't like. You
know? I appreciate that, John.
Yeah, thank you.
I told you that we got a bunch of snow. They actually built a snowman and then a snow dog next to it. So they were very eager. They had a very strong desired outcome, which was that I go out and look at this. And Beatrice is banging on the door.
Beautiful.
So what are your intuitions on this, Seth? Your modeler intuition? I like... Yep. I'm really drawn to, I want to complete a poem. That's where I get the strong, that's what I'm most attracted to. That's my bias.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't know about you. But.
Yeah, I think that's great. The few different things that came up in my mind is one, like you mentioned comparing these two different lines, right? And you could compare the I, you could compare, you know, the prepositions, you could, because there's several things that are kind of matching. Like you could compare concrete and poem and see if there's something there. Or even just kind of asking more questions in an open way and seeing if something concretizes that way.
That's right. Yeah. So you could zoom out or you could zoom in.
Yeah, yeah. But one thing we could do, so before asking another question like that, I could just say, do you have any thoughts right now working?
Me? Well, I feel that incomplete in that when I say I want to complete a poem, then I'm not sure that what I mean by poem is what is understood by poem. So what is poem and what is particular or special or different about poem as that I want to complete? And you know, that makes that a meaningful outcome for me. And also that it's a concrete outcome, but it's not an ultimate outcome.
Can you read that?
I want to complete a poem. Yes.
Can we just look at that? I want to complete a poem.
It's a nice sentence.
Let's just generate some desire. Let's just generate some, questions. When I want to complete a poem, is there anything else about I want? I want to complete a poem. Whereabouts want? Does want have a size or a shape? Complete. So you can take each one of these, this whole statement, each word, and you can ask generate dozens of questions about each word.
Yeah, I mean, Marco even started interrogating that sentence on his own and asking his own questions, which is when poem, is there anything else about poem?
Poem is something that can be shared. It's something that can be enjoyed. It can be learned. It can be explored. It can be interpreted. It could be remixed. It could be merged or put into creative combinations with other forms of expression, other art forms, other kinds of media. Poem is harmonizing to body, mind, spirit. Poem brings cosmos and a world into illumination. And it creates a sphere. Poem creates a sphere of being that radiates, pulsates, vibrates with life, makes room for diverse kinds of life, diverse kinds of expression. Like in poetic language and poetic space, there's room for many minds.
And there's room for many minds. And creates a sphere of being and radiates. And poem is harmonizing body, mind, spirit. And I want to complete a poem. And when room and sphere of being, and I want to create a poem, where is sphere?
It's kind of like a donut, actually. It's in that it has this vortex flow from outer to inner to outer, and spiral currents from top, bottom, in, out, through. There's non-Euclidean geometries involved in like these energetic fluxes of feeling, lines of feeling. I think that there are like that part of what a poem does is bring one through shades, lines, moments, moods, tunings, tempos, and that it modulates that flux of consciousness in ways that are regenerative and or introspective or many things. But the poem that I want to complete has these various features.
Can I ask a question? And a vortex and a flow. And when a vortex and a flow, is there a size or a shape or color?
Well, it's sort of, it's hard to say that it doesn't have a size or shape exactly in three-dimensional space. Like, I can't say it goes out to that, you know, to the moon or to some other galaxy, but it in a way like subsumes that space in a kind of local emanation, like a kind of field. And there's purples and pinks and blues and greens and kind of hazy thing over here and more crystalline points. You know, it's I think, you know, has depths and murkinesses, but also like pristine heights and clarities. I think it could move between worlds.
Do you have you want to go for it? You have another question, Seth?
I would love to. Yeah. And between worlds and depth and murkiness and also pristine heights and regenerative and donut vortex flow. And I want to create a poem. and look and win flow, and I want to create a poem. Is there anything else about I?
I want to complete. I think it's complete a poem.
Complete a poem, yeah. I am following a guiding star. And sometimes I lose track of where the star is. Sometimes there's cloudiness. The night is occluded, dark. But there's also an inner sensing of where it is. I don't have to necessarily see it in the sky in order to follow it. I can. There's a heart connection with the star. The star is sort of like an externalization of a heart sense, of a sense of orientation, emotionally and in this feeling here. I'm rubbing my chest. That when the lines of communication are clear, you know, when there's strong resonance with that star, then those energies flow there. And when there's occlusion, and then they seem to be compressed and tangled up.
Is there anything about chest? Wind chest? And vortex and flow of that sphere, of that and chest. I'm locating, this was out here. It had a size, a shape, it had colors, it had depth, it had murkiness. And then there's chest. And did you ask something about the eye? I'm trying to locate. Did we locate the eye?
He told a story about the eye.
Yeah, but there was no location, though. Whereabouts is that eye? With all of that, where is the eye? And does that eye have a size or a shape? And you mentioned the chest.
Yeah, the eye is right here.
The right eye here. Is out here?
Well, it's here, and it has this kind of... it's like a big donut. It's a little bit brown and golden colored right now. I don't know why I'm saying that. That's what I'm seeing. And it's like a kind of energetic donut that has like there's a heart feeling, but it also is out here, like sort of out, I don't know, 20 feet.
And a heart feeling and out here about 20 feet.
Right, but not a firm boundary. There's a sort of phases, and they're bands too.
And they're glazed. Phases, they're bands.
Like a glaze too on the donut. It's like the really layers of it. So it's very weird. I wouldn't have even thought that.
There's the beginning, I think, of some relationships that could be created. Once we get something located, an eye. There seems to be, the eye seems to be here and out there, and that's where the vortex is. So, and there's something going back and forth, and there are different phases. But I'm really, I'm trying to find a location for the eye, for that vortex. It's already going into metaphor.
So a lot of spatial stuff. You even said cloudiness was over here.
I think we just need to label it and mark it and locate it. And then we can create relationships between the I and the poem, complete, want. I want to like find every word in that desired outcome. We can find a location for it in his perceptual space, not in the theories he has, but in his actual perceptual space, which he's begun to do. He's embodying it right now in front of us. That's very different. You notice the big difference between that and him talking about theory? Mm-hmm. It's a very different kind of, he's starting to embody it, and it's embedded in his perceptual space. It's just about finding those locations and then finding the relationships. So thank you very much. I don't know where we want to go with this, but I think it'd be great if this would be a good time for you to represent this in a way that makes sense to you, Marco.
Okay. I'll try. I think I can.
If you can, that would be great, because then we could work with Michael. And Seth, I feel a little bit like I'm getting in your way. I apologize if that's happening.
This feels great to me. I think
I'm a little confused, to tell you the truth, because I know what I would do if I was by myself here, but I'm with you and I'm with the group, and I want to be very respectful of boundaries, even though, and I'm so used to working with you one-on-one, yeah. And we have our own way of working when we're working together. But now we're learning how to co-model with each other as partners, yeah. And that's a slightly different thing. So I want to get out of your way.
A lot of different energies happening. Everybody is contributing.
Exactly. This is good stuff. This is good stuff.
Great. Yeah, I feel the same way. It feels two things, if I could say that. One is I really like, John, that you just asked if Marco wanted to represent this right now, because in a way it is a to use his word, in a sense, a cloudy kind of landscape. And even Marco, the way you responded to that question, you're kind of like, yeah, I could do that, because it's not totally clear yet. But even the act of kind of drawing out, or whatever you might feel like doing to represent it, will kind of give us some anchoring and better understanding and start to pull stuff together, I think.
Right.
And I forgot the second thing I was going to say.
That's good. I'm also very mindful of the time. We have 45 minutes left. So I think that's what I'm trying to, I'm in time and I'm through time, but I'm more through time than I am in time.
Because I want to
see what he comes up with, and also work with Michael and work with you. And we have 45 minutes, so I'm trying to. Maybe I'm being a little too ambitious. I can just kick back and relax and just flow with the flow. But
breathe, John. Breathe from your heart.
Well, I am in my heart, and because I want to give everybody an opportunity.
No, I know. I'm sorry. I just.
Yeah, and Marco looks like he's off creating a representation that makes sense to him. And I'm learning about my own modeling and my own process and my own biases as well as I work with Seth, and him finding his way of working with Marco. I don't think you've ever worked with Marco before, have you, Seth? You've worked with Michael and myself.
A little bit once.
Oh, yes, in New York. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
So what would you like to have happen now?
Do you want to have a go, Mike?
I'm ready.
Now, are we going to work with last week? Or are we going to work with a different outcome? What would you like to do, Michael? Is there something that you learned about last week that you want to continue this week, or is there something else happening?
No, I think the inhabit and manifest.
Okay.
Need to work with that, because ever since last week, that's kind of been an ongoing theme in my daily life.
Okay. To manifest,
inhabit and manifest.
To inhabit and manifest. I wrote it down from last week. Maybe it's changed. To inhabit and manifest whatever this brings to the moment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. That's it.
No, I wrote it down. I don't know if you can read it. It's probably too small. But to inhabit and manifest whatever this brings to the moment. And I'm just bringing this attention. This may be really clumsy, but where's the pronoun I?
Inhabit.
Where are you when inhabit, Michael?
In my body.
In your body. Whereabouts in your body?
The mid part of my body without arms or legs.
Mid part of my body without arms or legs.
There is a head and neck attached, but there's no arms and legs.
No arms or legs. Head and neck attached?
Yeah.
And then is there anything else about you? When? Arms and legs and head and neck attached?
There's this intensity of helplessness and fire.
Intensity of helplessness and fire. And when intensity of helplessness and fire, is there anything else about fire?
It is not one temperature. It fluctuates between the heat color of blue and the soothing color of yellow.
And fluctuates, and blue and soothing yellow. And when fire fluctuates, blue and yellow, what happens to intensity, helplessness, when fire fluctuates?
It transmits into a jello-like quality.
A jello-like quality. And when it transmits into a jello-like quality, does that jello-like quality have a size or shape?
I feel a size and shape without knowing what it is.
And you feel a size and shape without knowing what it is? And when you feel a size and shape, whereabouts feel? On the inside? The outside?
The feeling is located at my belly button.
And I can do a timeout, if I may, and okay, consult with Seth. I was looking for a personal pronoun I, because his statement did not have a personal pronoun I. And so I asked, I'm trying to do this in a clean way, and I'm not sure how to do it. So I asked him, where are you when inhabit manifest? And then he went into intensity of helplessness and fire. And then he developed fire. It got transmitted or transmuted to gel-like substance, and he feels it. And now it's located in the belly button.
Yeah, he's really offering a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with this, and I don't know if I got it. I'm just going with what he's giving me. But is that location there? Is that the personal pronoun I?
Yeah, there's a couple.
This is where what I want to develop is a sense of.
Yeah,
I'm not doing very good here. I'm still feeling very confused. But
I think I was thinking one thing that might work is to take any of these things, especially locations, and tie them back to specifically that phrase inhabit and manifest, and see if there's a connection that happens.
Great.
And the other one is that because we came upon his what's the word, direct outcome right now without straight up just going, Mike, what would you like to have happen? Right. It was kind of, we brought it in. It was this, right. And then, so he never ever actually just kind of laid it out in the same way. If that makes sense.
We could ask him, well, and with all of that, what would you like to have happen now?
Yeah, I think that's good.
So that would give him a chance to update his desired outcome if he wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we could backtrack some and then ask if that's if he has another desired outcome, or what would you like to have happen now in this session that would be most useful for you? Mm-hmm. That's another approach, I think. Good. Go away, but it's all yours. Are you okay, Michael, with us talking about you?
Yes, it's fine. It's fine.
And let's see. And with all of this, Michael.
Say it again. I'm sorry, Seth. I didn't hear you. Say it again.
Oh, I was just saying, with all of this.
Oh, okay.
What would you like to have happen now?
I would like to have happen a trust in my sense of I.
And I would like to have happen a trust in my sense of I. And when a trust in my sense of I, is there anything else about a trust?
Yes, it's scary.
And it's scary. And trust.
And yes.
When it's scary, what kind of scary is that scary?
It's the scary of a three-year-old child on a boat shitting his pants and his grandfather yelling at him.
And the scary of a three-year-old child on a boat shitting his pants and his grandfather yelling at him. And when three-year-old child on a boat and shitting his pants and scary, where is three-year-old child on a boat?
It's a dinghy. And three-year-old child is sitting in the middle of the dinghy where there's a board. And grandfather is at the front of the boat facing him.
Hmm.
Can I ask a question? This is Seth. You're doing great. We're doing a little age regression now. He's 3 years old. What could three-year-old Mike be wearing when shitting in pants? You want to develop that? Also, I think it's good to get intentions. What does three-year-old want to have happen? What does grandfather want to have? Get those intentions, and then we can take it from there. But I think we want to really protect Michael, mm-hmm. because this is very sensitive material, and we're in a public space, we're not in a therapy room. So I'm like, let's be sure we have a safe container.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Yeah. But I'm also totally confident in Michael's capacity to disclose what's most useful for him. So.
Yeah. All right. And a dinghy and sitting in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And 3-year-old child and shitting his pants. And what does 3-year-old child want to have happen?
grandfather to stop yelling at me and stop shitting my pants.
And stop shitting my pants and grandfather stop yelling at me. And a trust in my sense of I. And when stop shitting my pants and a trust in my sense of I, is there anything else about a trust?
I don't know.
And don't know. And when you don't know, and 3-year-old Mike, is that what they called you? And 3-year-old Mike, and shitting in your pants. And I want grandfather to stop yelling. And can that happen?
Today, yes, it fucking can.
And when today, yes, it fucking can, and 3-year-old Mike wants grandfather to stop yelling, then what happens?
Exhale.
Exhale.
That's the I want.
That's the I want.
Exhale, relax.
And can that happen when that's the I that I want?
Motherfucking right.
And is this a good place to pause?
I think it is. I think it really is.
And could you represent that in a way that makes sense to you,
Michael? It'll be physical. I'm not going to draw a picture or anything. It'll be some kind of pantomime.
Okay, great. And Seth, yeah. How are you with all of that? Is that okay with you? What was going on?
Yeah,
I felt you were going very quickly back into trust. I wanted to backtrack a little bit because I didn't have a clear intention from 3-year-old or the intention from Michael now. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where I had to go. I think we could also have asked, what did grandfather want to have?
Right. Sure.
I don't know. And it may not be important. Because I think he's found a very, all of his nonverbals were, I want.
Yeah, I think it ended in something very strong, which is what we were kind of looking for anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So then, like from there, I was thinking that you could do a lot of, you could ask, where's the location of this I, which, you know.
And I could appreciate how it was very ambiguous, because trust and scary. And I could tell, well, what's Seth going to do with that? So I could tell when you're in an ambiguous, there's a kind of a double bind pattern, I think.
Yeah.
That was my feeling. And how do you work with that? I think it's great that we went this direction because sometimes people who've had a lot of trauma, like myself and Michael, it's not easy for us to jump to desired outcomes. We have all this traumatic shit that hasn't been taken care of. Mm-hmm. But I think now that the 3-year-old, that's when I think age regression is very helpful. As long as we have a safe container, and I think we do. So.
Yes, John, we do. Thank you.
And Marco, you want to go back to Marco? Is this good? Is this a good time? Seth, I'll let you take the lead and I'll follow you, okay?
Okay. Did you make something, Marco?
Yeah, I just drew, I just doodled and did some coloring as well. And I could tell you about it.
Please.
There's a, you know, a figure here. This is myself. And energy centers and places where energy circulates and cycles. And I have my arms out, my legs down. This, I don't know if you could see it, but there's a kind of rectangle up here. That's a window. There's a transparency happening here between this space where I am right now, this room here, and then there's a window in front of me, which you can't see, but it's seeing what through that window and then seeing this kind of background that is outside. So I'm projecting or I'm transparent to the outside, and there's mountain peaks over here. There's a bird flying somewhere over here. There's a flower over here, kind of a plant with green leaves. There's some pictures on the wall here. This is inside the room, not outside. And there's some little bugs. There's two little girls. I think they're over here. They're out in the yard playing. And then there's a kind of root network down here toward the bottom. These squiggly lines, they're sort of like rhizomatic. And then there's a vortex down here. This is kind of a root vortex down in the earth, deep, deep down. And there's a flow or motion amongst these different layers from down to up, and then also from in to out, like the emanation. So a sort of emanation of energies that is conducting the the vortic energies. So it's creating kind of an auric field. And so from this space, there's a transmission of energy in all directions. And in that energy, these life forms flourish. Flowers, plants, there's some worms down here, birds, trees, sky. I think that's what I was just starting to have fun and let my imagination go. And then I started coloring it, and I have these crayons over here that I almost never use. I don't actually just do this unless John is around. I don't end up doodling. But I really enjoy it because it kind of is allowing that breathing. Like I feel like my imaginal body is getting some exercise. It's getting to, just feel itself. And there's a happiness there. The eyes are kind of half open. They're looking both inward and outward at the same time, kind of like jazz musician that has sort of seen the underworld, but also is in, the space where they're performing. And then this is a kind of like stronger center here in the hara and the gut center. There's kind of like an electric force and a kind of that navel over there. I don't know if you can see that.
So there's aura, stronger center, and jazz musician, inward and outward at the same time, transmission of energy, emanation, down to up and into out. Root vortex, deep, deep down. Little girls,
flowers. Two girls.
Pictures on a wall. Mountain peaks. Window. And that's me. And is there anything else about Hara?
Yes. Hara is really the feeling of confidence. Like this is coming from a reservoir of like power.
A reservoir of power. And where does that power come from?
I think it comes from the vortex, actually, and it kind of fills up. It fills up a reservoir from a vortex. Like come down and like through a sort of narrower passage into a larger container.
It comes from the vortex. And when it fills a narrower passage into a larger container, then what happens?
There is a there's an upsurge in felt creative energy, like felt energy, creative energy, song energy, sound energy, thought energy, and it has to come through the passageway though, and that's where it can get stuck. I want to say that's been my experience. There can be a disconnect, and it could be that there's a fear of the vortex, and that when that fear of the vortex relaxes, and when I can relax into it, I can allow it to give what it has, then the feeling of power can return.
And when relax, the fear of vortex and relax and the power can return, what happens to two little girls?
I think that they're outside playing, and that when I am flowing with creative power, I can participate with them. I can play with them.
And when you're flowing with creative power, you can participate with them. And then what happens?
Then there is a fun. There's a feeling of fun and a feeling of family, enjoyment and joy and fulfillment and happiness and laughter.
And when happiness and laughter and fulfillment and family and fun, is there a relationship between all of that and I want to complete a poem?
Yes.
What kind of yes is that?
There is a dual dedication like that. My completing the poem is a liberation also for the creative energy. It's closing circuits and connecting dots and points and allowing for conductivity, the conduction of energy. So...
And a dual dedication and conductive. And I want to complete a poem. And can that happen?
It can and must.
Can and must. And when it can and must, what's the first thing that needs to happen.
Necessary conditions.
That happens. Okay.
I have to wake up early in the morning and dedicate myself to my craft.
And I have to wake up early in the morning and dedicate my craft. And when I have to wake up early in the morning, can that happen?
Yes, absolutely. And it often happens. It often happens, but...
And what's the next step? What's the next thing that has to happen to make that happen?
I have to get to bed early enough that I can be awake when I get up in the morning. Not groggy, but lucid.
You have to wake up early and have to go to bed early.
Early to bed, early to rise.
And is there anything else that needs to happen to make that happen?
The tasks of the day, the responsibilities of the day need to be fulfilled.
The tasks of the day need to be fulfilled. And is there anything else that needs to happen so that I can, that I want to complete a poem?
I have to let go of some things.
What things do you need to let go of?
Irrelevant nonsense.
Irrelevant nonsense. Seth, do you see where I'm going with this? We're now in necessary conditions. He's given us three steps: going to bed early, getting up early, completing tasks. And then there's something that may be wobbling a little bit. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's necessary, but there's something about letting go. So we can develop that and letting go. What kind of letting go? Whereabouts is letting go? Does letting go have a size or shape? So we might go back into development.
Yeah.
Even though we're in, so I think we can go back and forth from desired outcome, back into relationships, intentions, attributes. And I think, but I got a very robust yes. I wasn't just like, well, yeah, maybe. It was a yes. And I think that's important. And that's a sign to me that if we haven't got a desired outcome, we've come very close. Which is really cool.
It's useful, actually, because it's given me a focus to what are the things that I can do.
Right.
Bring about the outcome that I want.
That's right. That's right. So it isn't just about pre-associating. It's about direction. So I think that's, if you don't have a desired outcome, clean language is just about pre-association. But if you have a desired outcome, and then you use those associative capacities, then I believe you're really working with the imaginal in a very effective way, because we're not just being visionaries, we're also implementing and creating a realist strategy, which the good thing about all this is you have everything that you need already. I'm presupposing everybody has everything they already, you already have what you need. It's just maybe not conscious yet. So this is very liberating for me, Marco, because I felt we were able to do the whole framework.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that, Seth, that we were working with the frameworks?
Mm-hmm.
in, I think, a great way, because we didn't just say in decide, we just didn't say in developing or just or relationships, and we matured some changes, and then we went into the necessary conditions, which is what I really, that sort of fits in with my desired outcome, which is I want to explore relational processes that make other relational processes possible. And can that happen? What's the first thing that needs to happen? What's the second thing that needs to happen? What's the third thing that needs to happen? Well, for one thing, Marco, in a really weird way, has given me my, has created the conditions so that I can make concrete my desired outcome, which is about relational processes that make other relational processes possible.
Yeah.
So this is where I think this can be very generative for a group that's attuned to these, we know what the other person's desired outcome is, and consciously and unconsciously, we may be creating conditions for that, to make that manifest and to inhabit it, Michael, inhabit and make concrete. And we can find those frozen places in ourselves that are stuck in the past, and they can grow up. We can support them. Like the three-year-old Mike who was being yelled at by his grandfather, and the adult Mike who can take care of the three-year-old Mike. And Seth, we haven't had a chance to work with you yet, but I feel like this has been very generative for me. And I'm hoping we have 5 minutes left, that if you've learned something, or Marco or Michael, if there's anything we've learned that we want to share with one another and maybe create a kind of nice little coda, some sort of musical flourish at the end here, so that we can all have a nice dream. A lucid dream, perhaps.
Yeah, really.
Taking with us all kinds of things. We could even weave together, Seth, a little hypnotic trance with all of this material. We don't have to do that, but we certainly could.
Definitely. I was just thinking that one thing that's really cool for me in going through this is people will present their own metaphors or viewpoints or something, and often that'll resonate with you. Sometimes, or me, I guess I'm saying in this case, sometimes for reasons I know, sometimes for reasons I don't, but there'll just be certain images that are like, zing, and then it gets applied into my own process. You know, I'll hear myself thinking I need to remember that, or, you know.
I guess one question I could ask is, what do we know now, Seth, Marco, Michael, about the language of desire? And the search for the elusive personal pronoun I.
I'll say that I think I've learned that it's closer than we think.
It's closer than we think.
I'd say that the language of desire and the pronoun I are entangled and twingled and can't be totally separated, but they are distinct expressions of, for me, the wholeness that is desire and the pronoun I. There's a wholeness that this, I'll just say now, this process has helped me understand the wholeness and not so much the split offness that is a component of life because of trauma.
And with all of that, Seth, and what I really want is an understanding. Is there anything else about what I really want?
You asking me?
Yeah. That was from your desired outcome from last week.
uh, Is there anything else about what I want?
What I really want is an understanding. What I really want is an understanding. And what I really want, when what I really want is an understanding.
Sure. Well, I'm getting a just like waves of an ocean kind of coming and going. And that particular formulation, I guess, is a certain wave. And it's kind of gone out right now. But I'm sure it's going to come back in a different form. I feel really very permeable right now. And the eye, even the idea of an eye is really, it's for me, it's really come and gone through a lot of different shapes during this process, which has been a little disorienting at times, but.
A little bit what?
Disorienting, but it's very nice right now.
Thank you all for your patience and for your stamina also, because I think it's very challenging for me, that's for sure. But what I'm really enjoying about this process, exploring relational process this way, using clean language, is it gives me the questions are very simple, but they can help us negotiate with enormous complexity. You know, with all of this that's going on, it's just so nice to know that there's a way that we can create desired outcomes and create conditions for those desired outcomes, so that I believe we can use our imaginations in this small world network right here and, you know, go out into the community and see what happens next. And we can come back together a little more skillful and a little more aware. And I believe this is a very important thing for us to be doing right now in the middle of the pandemonium of this pandemic, to, you know, create networks of knowledge communities like ours. So thank you for this opportunity once again to share at a much deeper or higher level than is usual for me. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and I concur that the use of this technology, you know, from the beginning, I've been with this for about 2 years. The learning curve for myself, and I just feel from the rest of the community, you know, we still can't take it for granted, but it's a clumsy metaphor, but it's like learning how to ride a horse. You got to befriend the horse. You got to talk to the horse. You got to get your ass on the horse. And then you got to ride the horse. So thank you, John, because I think, you know, it goes to your intentions of and bringing intentions about the use. Marco's having this, creating this fabulous website. I think I would be a different person if I haven't engaged in this. And I haven't been in any of your presence physically, but your presence is always with me. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Seth, for your support. I really appreciate your presence here.
Definitely. Wonderful time.
Yeah, it was good to hang out with you, Seth. I hope we get to do it again.
Yeah, chop it up more, but yeah, this is great.
Yeah, let's make it happen again. I'm really looking forward to the next gathering.
Same.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a great weekend.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you next time.